Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. Thanks for coming by today. We are finally going to have a Bullies to Buddies Day. We haven't had one in several weeks, and it never ceases to amuse me, the fact that no matter what we talk about, this workbook that is done by Izzy Kalman about bullying and people's behavior and the terminologies that are used, what's true and what isn't so true, really relate to everything we do, every show we've done. So many times we're reading a story about hoarders or doing a show about hoarders, and we find out that there's something going on with those people that have been afflicted by this particular malady of wanting to surround themselves with stuff. And often it has something to do with the way they were treated or the way the social part of their lives accepted them. I had a piece come to me recently, and I thought I saved it, and I didn't. And it's from Upworthy. Upworthy, I joined their link, and I get a lot of stuff from them. And the most recent thing was sent to me from another friend, but I was glad because I had thought I shared it, and it didn't go through, and I didn't check that day. But it says, she gives the bullies a few seconds, then she stops them cold. So you see a picture of a young girl who doesn't look real happy herself. So you're assuming that the story is going to be about her. And it just shows a close-up of her face, and she's watching, and she's near tears. And you hear a whole bunch of kids, go ahead and cry. Go ahead and cry. Cry. Why don't you just cry? And then she just screams out for them to stop. And the camera moves over to a group of children that are bullying a younger child. And everybody sees her and picks up their stuff and with a bit of a grudge, I would say, walk away. And do I think that that would happen all the time, if some of you are thinking that? No, I guess I probably don't. But I do think it would happen 70-something percent of the time, because nobody wants to have somebody attack them. It's that safety mode that kicks in, unless there's something else going on. But this was in a schoolyard. This was kids that I'm going to say the young girl that told them to stop might have been 12 or 13, and the other kids were even younger than that. So, and everything we've talked about recently, all the stories about relationships, a lot of those relationship stories, there was a basis of bullying in there somewhere, hidden in there, or not so hidden in there. It's all about our treatment of others. And like Shelley and I said yesterday, it can't always be about you. It can't always be about how it affects you, how it makes you feel, how everything changes your world. Sometimes you have to think about someone else. And I think bullying is a part of that. We've talked about the fact that often bullies are being bullied. We've talked about the fact that often there's a real crime being done. If somebody hurts you or lays their hands on you or hits you, anything to you, that's no longer bullying. That's an attack, and that's a crime. Bullying usually comes in the form of words or actions that are not touching you. in very young ages, bullying can come in the form of just making a face at somebody. Did you ever be driving down the car with your kids in the back seat? Mom, so-and-so's making a face at me. Tell him to stop. Mom, Joey won't stop making faces at me. Like, that's really hurting somebody. But kids do that all the time. And that is being picked on. I don't know that it's bullying unless it really progresses, but it's still being picked on, and kids do it all the time. So it's the adult's job in that instance to make a point and stop it, because it will just lead to something else if nothing is done. Many of these things, because we get the mindset if we ignore it, it'll go away. Things seldom go away all on their own. Very, very rare. So let's bring Shell in. There's a couple things I wanted to mention that we might talk about next week, if anybody has any input on them. One, of course, is the horrific story that's been on the news about a young woman living in a house that belonged to her ex-husband's family. And I don't know exactly what happened to alert the local police, etc. But when they searched the house, they found the bodies of six very, very young, if not newborn, babies in packages. So again, to my mind, this is some form of mental illness. A normal person does not do that. So I'd like to talk about that next week. Next week, on the 25th, Shelley and I will be going to It's Okay to Talk, sponsored by the Palm Beach Mental Health Association. And I think stories like that are the reason why we need to really, really look in to the circle of mental illness again. So, good morning, Shell.
Good morning, Rainey.
How you doing today?
Doing pretty good.
That's good.
I think as usual, but I like it like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yep, one of the things you just said a moment ago, which kind of caught my attention, you were talking about, you know, different types of bullying and that even making faces at each other. And then you said, I'm not sure if that's bullying. I think teasing and bullying I think there's a little blurred line between the two of them. I think sometimes teasing can lead into bullying, but I don't think when it first starts out it's meant as bullying. I think it's just meant to mess with somebody that you like or that you kind of want to give a hard time, but bullying is, the purpose of bullying is to get somebody to be kind of like vulnerable to you, because true bullying is power, and that's why people do it. Somehow they're feeling powerless in their life, and they need to lord that power over somebody else. And it always comes out in a way that's cruel. So, you know, like when siblings tease each other or friends tease each other, that's coming from a different place. You're actually messing with somebody that you like. So I don't really think. I think that sometimes the lines can get blurred, though, where you start out teasing somebody, and if they don't react in a way that where they play back with you, I think it can turn into bullying, because then you get annoyed that they didn't take it the way you meant it. And we've seen that happen. But I do think it's two different things. But the other thing you said was that at that point the parents need to stop it, and that's kind of the common notion, but that's one of the things we discuss on the show, that actually it's better if the parents don't stop it and let the kids work it out on their own and just kind of assist them going in that direction. But the parents shouldn't be stopping it. The parents should be teaching the kids how to treat each other, the one kid to stop the teasing and the other kid to stop it on his own with, hey, you kids work this out, but I want you both to behave, and this way you're not taking either side.
Well, exactly, but that's what I'm talking about. You have to intervene and give some words of wisdom, because it will snowball something else. It's not about mom and dad picking a side. It's about, though, mom and dad being aware of what's going on, because it will snowball. And if a more, I don't want to use the word stronger, but I guess it is a strength, the child that's doing the picking, he really builds on that power very quickly, or she does, and it can turn into something else. So intervention, not just turn around and say, knock it off or stop it, which is what most of us do. It is an opportunity to say, you know, I think you're being mean. Stop doing that. And again, what I would say is, don't you love your sister? Don't you love your brother?
Yeah, that's my favorite.
Yep. Instantly the kids would get that look on their face. Well, of course I do. I'm just messing with them, you know.
Exactly.
Remember the story that the video that somebody sent me about it was done like the Christmas story where the kids came back to haunt the boy who was bullying the other boy with his friends in school.
Right.
And that comeback every time. We didn't do anything. We didn't touch him. We didn't do a swirly. We didn't, you know, we didn't do anything to him. We didn't hurt him in any way. We were just messing with him. Well, about those words, messing with him. Messing with him. Even the terminology, if you really think about it, creates something that isn't okay. Is, you know, messing with something means you're messing it up. You're taking it, you know, you're putting it in a bad place. So, but a lot of kids, that's exactly what they think. They think that as long as they haven't hit somebody or hurt somebody or written something as silly as the old joke, kick me on my back, those kind of things, then they're really not hurting anybody. But in essence, you know, they just need somebody to say to them, you know. The other thing I've always thought is the golden rule, which you don't always say it exactly the way it's said in the golden rule, but, you know, would you like it if somebody did that to you?
Exactly.
Does that make you good if somebody did that to you? So a lot of things that we, intervention and being in a place where you just save the victim all the time, in my eyes, are two different things. If you have a child that is continuously coming to you, so-and-so's picking on me, so-and-so's being mean to me, so-and-so did this to me, so-and-so did that to me, I'm going to move it right to a workplace, because I'm going to tell you that if one person is in my office all the time telling me something bad about everybody there, I know where the problem lies.
Mm-hmm.
I know,
right.
Without talking to anybody else, where the problem lies. So, but there does need to be some kind of verbal intervention to make people, kids, even adults, think about what's going on and put it into some kind of a normal perspective so that they can get a handle on it. I do praise this book, and I do believe that Izzy is right about just about everything he says. There's a couple things I would do differently, and I suspect it's because I'm maternal and he's paternal. So, you know, and there's always a difference there as well. So the chapter that we're at with the book is called Acute Victim, True Victim versus Chronic Victim and Victim Mentality. Now, this promises to be a very interesting chapter because I often wonder if not, I think onlookers, if they have any kind of intuition whatsoever, they can pick out those. But I think if you're immersed in it, many times you don't know whether you are being truly victimized or if you just look to be victimized, you know. And we've met both kinds of people. So an acute victim or a true victim, you are in the wrong place at the wrong time. someone abuses you or commits a crime against you, and it has nothing to do with your behavior. You may not be able to prevent someone from abusing you once. If a criminal decides to target you, there's little you can do to prevent it. Being an acute, true victim can be something that lasts for a long time, such as being born to parents who are crack addicted and have no business being parents. They abuse you regardless of your behavior, or your spouse develops a brain lesion and becomes violent towards you regardless of your behavior. Those are acute victims and people that are, it's not going to matter if they stand up. It's not going to matter if they lay down. It's not going to matter if they get in your face or if they hide. They really, really, really have a problem. A chronic victim or a victim mentality, on the other hand, if you are victimized repeatedly when other people in the same situation are not necessarily being victimized, your behavior probably has something to do with the way you are treated. If you think like a victim, you will be victimized wherever you are. I so agree with that. You are not aware of it, but the things you are doing to try to make the abuse and the bullying stop are probably making it continue. Let's do a little scenario like that. Say we have a young group of kids. Let's 13 to 15. And you have, everybody's talking, you know, there's like, I don't know, six or seven of them, and they're all friends with each other. And usually a problem when you are in cliques like that is when there's an uneven number, because that usually leaves somebody out in the cold, and nobody's talking to them. So let's say there's seven of them. And number seven is a young girl, and she looks around the room, and everybody's kind of like hanging out together, but Shelly and Renee are talking to each other, and Joey and Jack are talking to each other, and Penny and Bill are talking to each other, and nobody's talking to this seventh person. She's kind of like odd man out. So she wants to get everybody's attention, right? So she says, you know, hey, everybody, what are we going to do tonight? And everybody just nods their head. They don't want to be mean to her, but they're immersed in a conversation. Now, can't you just see this happening?
Oh, sure, yep.
Says something to get their attention and has to have some kind of shock value, because otherwise she's pretty sure she's not going to get the attention of everybody because they're absorbed in their own conversations and leading her out. So part of her is hurt, part of her is angry, so she's going to dig to find something to get their attention. So she says, she makes up something about somebody else that's not there, another friend of all of theirs, but she's not there. So she makes up something about them and tells everybody. And everybody listens to her, and everybody pretty much knows that it's not true, but they just go, really, you know, she did that, or that really happened? Yeah, you know. And she's so pleased that she has everybody's attention. And then a couple days later, that has all snowballed through this group of friends. A couple days later, all the kids, including the girl that she said something about, is on her. You know, I mean, on her. Why did you say that? It wasn't true. What's the matter with you? And she even enjoys the first few times that attention, because it means she gets, you know, everybody's attention. So that person will always be a victim. That person will do anything to get some attention, whether it's right or wrong. You have that situation with couples. You have that situation a lot, very sadly, with couples. And you have that situation with young kids. A lot of times if you have a house full of kids, you got one kid that's always doing stuff and everybody like, what in the hell is wrong with him? Why is he doing that? Well, He's doing that to get your attention.
Right, right. And in those particular cases, those type of people don't have appropriate social skills. They don't know how to participate with either one-on-one or in groups of people where they just, you know, where they interject their thoughts or feelings or they participate. They're so nervous to open their mouth that they actually try to manipulate the situation and create a reason for them to all of a sudden have something to say, like you say. They make up some story that they think is going to get everybody's attention and kind of put them in the limelight for a few minutes and without realizing that their 15 minutes of fame is going to lead to all kinds of dissension among the group towards them at some point, you know. But anytime you get into manipulation to win people over, it always backfires because it's not from anything that's real. It's just like people that lie to get themselves out of trouble. Well, you know, you can't remember a lie. So unless you're writing everything down and recording what your lies are, they always end up catching up with you. You know, you don't have to have a good memory to tell the truth because it's always, your memory is what it is. But when you start creating scenarios to either interact with people or to get yourself out of trouble, that always falls apart because it's not based on anything that's real.
Exactly. Well, and the other thing is that eventually, after you do that enough, especially when you're in the age bracket that I was talking about, everybody drifts away from you. Because you,
right.
You create too much drama. You create too much rocking the boat. And most of us don't want that. Most of us would like things to be fun, platonically comfortable, and be in a good place. Whenever you watch one of the goofy, what do they call the movies? Campy movies, is that what they call them? When they're like, is that the right word, campy?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. There's always a kid or a young person in one of those campy movies that stirs the pot, you know, gets everybody doing the wrong thing, gets everybody doing something stupid. And those movies are to make fun of our behavior. They really tell us how foolish we are, so many different kinds of scenarios. And
you know, movies out that are like that, if you notice, is that there has to be an underlying common sense attitude towards proper behavior because bullies are always shown to get it, you know, to get it in the end. And people revel in that the underdog or the person being bullied always seems to come out on top and the bullier always seems to get his comeuppance. So there's something about us that we instinctively don't like bullying. You know, we instinctively know that it's not the right thing to do, and yet in real life, most people go along with it because they don't want to interject themselves in any bullying scenario and then become the focus of that individual, you know. So they'll kind of turn their back on somebody they see being bullied and just walk away and say it's their problem, not my problem, and it just kind of perpetuates it, or even worse, they go along with the bully to prevent, you know, any attention being turned on them, and they almost incite the bully to get worse. So, you know, but the success of these movies show that on some sensitivity level, most people recognize that we shouldn't act that way. Otherwise, these movies wouldn't be such blockbuster hits.
Right. Let me real quick read this last little paragraph that I read about the chronic victim and victim mentality, because then I'm gonna lead into the characteristics of victim mentality, and they explain everything that we just talked about. It. If you are victimized repeatedly when other people in the same situation are not necessarily being victimized, your behavior probably has something to do with the way you are treated. If you think like a victim, you will be victimized wherever you are. You are not aware of it, but the things you are doing to try to make the abuse or the bullying stop are probably making it continue. That would be things like tattling. Instead of just sharing with somebody, you know, I'm being picked on and I'm not going to say names, but, you know, there's a way to report what's going on, especially if you're really scared, without, like, tattling. And I think kids need to be shown how to report something that's making them uncomfortable without looking like a big baby. Even though we talk about handling it yourself, if you can't handle it because you are in victim mode and you realize that no matter what you do, it gets worse and worse and worse, then I commend you for that. But you should be able to have somebody, and that's why I think peer counseling would be so valuable in situations like this. But it doesn't seem to be as readily available or easy to be set up, apparently. I don't know what the reason is. We're going to talk about that, I hope, when we go to the thing next Friday. Characteristics of victim mentality. And this kind of explains a lot of it, too. And we know people like this. I have a right to be treated well, left alone by other people. I have a right to happiness. My happiness is society's responsibility. Life is supposed to be fair. People are mean to me, and it's not my fault. It's hard to trust people because I can never know when they will hurt me again. Victims are good. Bullies are evil. Now, I can just hear a young person. I can hear AJ saying that, and AJ's bright as hell. But I can see him saying that just because of everything that people talk about. My victim status entitles me to special treatment. People who abuse me deserve to be punished. If I get revenge against my abusers, whatever I do to them is their fault. Now, all of those things, I know adults that think like that. I really know adults that think like that, as sad as that is for me to say, I do.
I do too.
Yep, I think that it has snowballed into that. Because like everything else, all of the media attention and all the notoriety that is caused by bullying has been a place for some of these people that are not socially adept to fall into. Just to fall into, because it's comfortable there, because then it's not their fault. It says that he has a paragraph that says, victims and responsibility. To say that chronic victims or people with a victim mentality have nothing to do with what happens to them is scientifically absurd. Unfortunately, most people have a victim mentality. It is natural for us to blame others for our problems. Few people are mature enough to take personal responsibility for what happens to them in life. Hell is not other people. It is yourself. That's a quote by Ludwig Wittgenstein, somebody I've never heard of, but I do like hell is not other people. It is yourself. So, again, it is about the mindset that you have yourself in and what you, how you analyze what is going on in your life. And if you do think that it's everybody else's fault that you're not happy, you have put yourself in victim mode. And you have actually welcomed with open arms any kind of abuse that comes to you because it gets you attention. How the anti-bullying movement encourages a victim mentality. The legal system exists to support victims. Unfortunately, as the mental health establishment becomes increasingly influenced by the legalistic anti-bullying psychology, which treats bullying like a crime, it is increasingly encouraging people to think and act like victims. Now, I hate that. I hate that because it makes me feel like it's too big now to change, but it's true. And for me, that's very, very sad. But it is true. It is a matter of how we decide to manage these problems as to what, you know, what snowballs out of it. So I agree with that. And I
agree with
that
also. I think that a lot of times what official agencies do to fix a problem a lot of times just creates more victim mentality in and around that issue.
Well, and now we have a bona fide issue. We have a bona fide disease. You know, there's a name for this. It's like fibromyalgia and so many different things that cover such a vast arena of issues. Now we have this, and they're right. Now I don't know why we're like that either, to be honest with you, and we all are. Once we realize it's a problem and somebody puts a title on it or a name on it, and we look at it and say, oh, my God, bullying has gotten just out of control. Or, oh,
well,
my God.
It takes personal responsibility away. I mean, I used to be like that. I used to say, well, the reason my life is like this and things aren't going exactly the way I like is because this person over here is holding me back. This person over here is not kind to me. That, you know, but so when you can blame somebody else, it makes you feel better about yourself because you didn't do anything wrong. And you're just doing the best you can with your set of circumstances. That's why people go into that mode. But what I've found since taking a lot of these self-help courses and taking control of my own health and everything, is that it's much more fulfilling to take responsibility because then you do gain true control. If my life is turning out the way it is because of me, all right, and there are things about it I don't like, then that means I can change things about me to change my life. But if my life is not turning out the way I like and it's truly because of other people, then I am a true victim and I'm going to stay that way for the rest of my life. And I choose not to be a victim. I choose to be in control of my life. So once you start taking responsibility, on one hand, it kind of takes all the excuses away, but on the other hand, it gives you a life that really is more in your control. But the majority of people don't think that way. You know, they don't want the discomfort of having to say, okay, well, I'm where I am, and it's my fault. And like you said at the beginning, there are some true victims. There are people that are just placed in a situation that they didn't create and have no control over. But most people are not victims. Most people who think they're victims really aren't. They just aren't taking responsibility for how things are going. And all these programs that are out there are actually bolstering the attitude that they're victims. So they really run with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like Izzy is teaching us, especially now that we're into the middle of the book, is the fact that some of the answers that we're putting out there support this mentality, really support it. There's eight things that he feels that are the messages that are being given out by the powers that be, the anti-bullying experts, are saying that kind of, sum up the situation. Number one is you have a right to be treated well by people. No one has a right to disrespect you in any way. Well, that could be true in a perfect world. We would love to think that nobody can be mean to you, but the truth of the matter is they can be. In a lot of cases, there's not a thing you can do about it, especially if you're 5 and they're 25. Or especially if you weigh 90 pounds and they weigh 190. Now, that's realistic. And it's foolishness to say to a young person when you're sending them out there to learn about the world on their own that that's the kind of world that exists out there, because it's not true. If
right.
you feel victimized by people, right, if you feel victimized by people, please don't think it's your fault in any way. That's another big fallacy. If you are setting yourself, you remember the game at all the fairs and the circuses and the carnivals and everything, where the guy sits in there and everybody throws things at the paddle to knock him into the water?
Right.
Some people, that's how they live their life, Shell. That's how they keep putting themselves in that place to get knocked down. And they don't even realize that they're doing it. But I know a lot of people like that. And I want to think, what in the hell did you say that for? So everybody can make
right.
fun of you? So you should be upset by words and by unsolicited physical actions, even if they don't cause you any physical damage or pain. So if you are going to be upset, what Izzy's saying is, if you give it credence, then it's true. If you get upset about it, then that must mean that they're right.
Right.
No. So that's another thing that we have to really discuss and think about with young people. Victims are virtuous. Bullies are evil. That's so
wow.
not true. So not true. But it is what they put out there.
Right.
And which, of course, to the very meek, I just want everybody to love me kind of a kid, that's where they're going to feel safe, is in that victim mode, because they're going to think that everybody else is going to protect them if they stay there. And how many adults have we met that are like that? We have a couple that are in our very close circle.
That's right.
You know? So you have to be careful trusting people, because they may be bullies or abusers. And that's another, you know, when you put all this energy out there and then leave it up to the deciphering of individuals who are, in some cases, either too young or just are not understanding what it is you're saying, then you get that loner. Then you get that kid that quits talking to anybody and comes up with their own ideas on how they're going to find fulfillment and how they're going to be happy, and turns them into who knows what. Sometimes they make it through that, but most times they don't. Most times they make very poor decisions because they don't trust anybody and they don't make friends. If you feel bullied by people, it is society's responsibility, not your own, to make them stop. Well, that's also, of course, that's the biggest part of Izzy's book. You and I both know that. He really talks about taking responsibility and turning things around and feeling good about how you stop something without leaving with a black eye, is the truth. So
right.
To think that somebody is going to, I mean, it's kind of like religion. I always get angry when people tell me that here's my worst one, when somebody dies. Well, that was God's decision. He wanted to take them home. And, you know, that, what a good way to make a kid hate God, you know. What a great way to make a kid hate God. You know,
I know, so I've never understood that.
Mm-hmm. People who are mean to you should not be tolerated and deserve to be punished. Well, you know, that's kind of an open statement, and I guess in some cases I would say that I would like that to happen myself. The story that I spoke about a few minutes ago where the woman just was apparently, I will research this so that we can talk about it at length next week, but people who hurt children, I do feel that way about. But a kid that's your own age, your own peer, that's being mean to you is being mean to you for a reason. You might better find out why he's being mean to you instead of trying to figure out how to punish him for it. And that's one of the things that Izzy is trying to teach all of us. You know, what did I do to you? Why are you mad at me? Did I do something to offend you? You know, and if you can't find those words, just why are you doing this?
Right.
Those words, a five-year-old can say that. Why are you doing this?
Mm-hmm.
Or the famous one is, you're so stupid and you're this and you're that and you're so. I will forget.
I love that one, too.
And then number eight is, it is good to be an informer. What happens to an informer in any scenario you can think of, Shelley? What happens to the little weasel or the little ferret that goes back and narks to the powers that be about everybody that thinks they're a good person, a good guy, a good friend? What happens to that person?
They, at very least, they get ostracized. At very most, they get beat up.
Exactly. And where, what kind of a bond does it form with anybody? First of all, the person that
nobody
you're not
trusts.
Into,
nobody
right?
wants to talk around them.
And it doesn't get them anything to the person that they're narking to. All it does is alert that person to the fact that they have somebody under their thumb.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't give kind of praise or recognition or help you up the corporate ladder. It doesn't do any of those things, believe me. All it does is let the person that's in the powerful seat know that they have a little weasel out there. And that's the way they feel about you, too. They don't
mm-hmm.
feel like you're a great person or a good girl or a good guy. They think you're a little weasel, too, just like everybody else is going to feel about you. So,
right.
No. And he also has the next chapter is blame versus responsibility. But somebody just sent me this, and I have to read it to all of you. It's called How I Learned to Mind My Own Business. I was walking past the mental hospital the other day, and all the patients were shouting, 13, 13, 13. The fence was too high to see over, but I saw a little gap in the planks. So I looked through to see what was going on. Some idiot poked me in the eye with a stick. Then they all started shouting, 14, 14, 14.
That's pretty funny.
But doesn't it kind of sum up different
like
things?
Stop that one for a minute.
I think we are... You know, and the fact that somebody would think that, you know, they're going to be so much smarter than the people on the other side of that particular wall, right?
Right, exactly.
So it just cracks me up. So the next chapter is blame versus responsibility. I wanna get through this because we run out of time to get even a whole page finished. But blame versus responsibility. To solve your problems, you must take responsibility for them. There is a difference between blaming and taking responsibility. The anti-bully experts blame bullies. The bullies to buddies approach blames no one.
Right.
It teaches taking personal responsibility for one's problems. Now, let me say, if you're listening out there and you're young and maybe you don't have kids, but you're like in your early 20s, this is going to help you in your career understanding this very, very simple fact. It will help you in your career. If you are doing anything, I mean, if you work at a job where all you do is I don't know, make parts in a factory or something, and you're in a shop all by yourself or something, and you don't interact with anybody, then I guess it doesn't matter what kind of social skills you have. But even that, I think there must be some opportunities to have some social skills. But in most work arenas that we take today, these are important things to remember. Every time something happens to you and you point your finger at somebody else, I knew somebody one time who would say that to me all the time. When you point your finger at someone else, three are pointing back at you. And this particular person was the worst person to point their finger at other people that I've ever met in my whole life. And when I came to that realization, every time they would say that particular old saying to me, I would cringe inside. And one day I had the opportunity to say to this person, you know, with all due respect, I wish you really understood what you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure that they didn't. So this can be a major, major problem and can leave you, you know, standing alone. It can really leave you standing alone because other people will pick up on that. When we talked about relationships this week, whoever the relationship was between, what was one of the first words that Monica and Shelley said to me? Trust, right?
Right.
You cannot, if you know that somebody comes to you every day and tells you some story about somebody else and tells you how they did this and how they did that. Can you believe they did that? You better believe me when I tell you that they are doing the same thing about you to somebody else.
That's right.
Believe me. You are not untouchable. If you have a friend that's doing that, you can count on the fact that they are going to other people and bad-mouthing you as well. So, remember, you're only going to be treated well if you treat others well, purely and simply. Blame is what goes on in courts of law. The guilty are blamed, and the victims are blameless. Blaming is useless for solving social and emotional problems. If I blame you for my problems, it won't solve anything. I'll only be mad at you. If I blame myself for my problems, it still won't solve any problems. I'll only be mad at myself. People can only take responsibility when they know what they are doing wrong. Victims cannot be blamed because they have no idea what their mistakes are. They are only aware that they are trying to make their problems disappear. They have no idea what their role is in creating or perpetuating their problems. Taking responsibility for a problem does not necessarily mean that you created the problem in the first place, only that you are in the position to solve it. Now, for me, all of that stuff is important to understand, and I don't care what aspect of your life you're talking about, what aspect. If you're talking about a relationship, if you're talking about a job, if you're talking about anything that has anything to do with any of us. All of these things are about personal responsibility. What's the first thing we really, really got the gist of when we started the radio show? And I talked about Michael Jackson's song, The Man in the Mirror. What do we say all the time? Who's the only person you can fix?
You.
Exactly. And, you know, that is at the very cusp of everything we're trying to teach to young people. I would like to think it's not too late for some of the old people, too, but sometimes when I talk to people and I listen to what they have to say to me, it kind of breaks my heart. It kind of breaks my heart because they're not open. They don't care if
right.
there's another way to do things. They have themselves convinced that they have a reason for everything that they feel strongly about. They feel that they have a good reason. And the sad part about it is, I'll bet you, if we were to test them and say to them, as a for instance, and this is a big one, why do you hate black people? Why do you hate them? Did one, you know, beat you up when you were a little girl or a little boy? Did one steal your first tricycle? Did one, why do you hate black people? Shelley, I would think to bet my last paycheck, which is gone, by the way, in case anybody's interested in taking me up on this. Nobody will have an answer for that unless it's based on other opinions. Right?
Right.
I mean, how can they?
Well,
or,
see, for somebody that's prejudiced or bigoted, that type of prejudice is mind-boggling to us. And for somebody who is, it's just as confusing to them for somebody not to think that way. And it really is taught. You know, it's ingrained in people, you know, to think a particular way about somebody because of the color of their skin or their religion or something like that. And it's something, like I said, I mean, I grew up with two different influences on that. My father was extremely bigoted and prejudiced, and my mom was just the opposite. And I chose to emulate my mom. But there are kids, for whatever their reasons, might have chosen to emulate the parent who wasn't that way because maybe they seem stronger to them. I was offended by the way my father treated people. You know,
mm-hmm.
But what about kids that both parents are like that and they never see the other side? So they just, that's all they ever see, and they just continue it.
Mm-hmm. Well, so it is. I wonder if it would help. I wonder if you could get through to anybody if they could just come to the realization that a securely faceted hatred in their being was manifested by the words of someone else, not by somebody's actions. I wonder if that would make a difference to anyone. Because I wonder if a securely faceted belief, if somebody realized that it was manifested by the words of someone else versus the actions of someone, if it would make a difference to an individual. I wonder if you could prove to Joe Blow over here that he's, you know, he absolutely crosses the street when he sees a black person. He doesn't trust them. He thinks they steal. He thinks they do this. He thinks they do that. If he were to come to the realization that none had ever stolen from him, nobody had ever even said a mean word to him that was black.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Nothing that had ever occurred to him. I wonder if our minds are open enough to say, oh, my God, why do I feel that way? What am I thinking?
It depends on how deep-seated it is and how much anger is behind it, because I've met people like that do, over time, mellow, and they lose their prejudice or bigotry, and I see other people that rail against it. And the more you try to show them sensitivity and say, well, look at this person, look at that person, they don't act anyway the way you talk, they actually dig their heels in even more. It's almost like they have an obsession not to let go of this hatred. And there's a lot of other things that play into that type of psychology. Also, it's usually people that aren't in control of their lives, and they have to find some other area of society to blame for why things are so screwed up and why they can't get ahead. So they will pick, like, you know, a minority and say, oh, because of all these minorities, I can't get a decent job. So now they're not going to relinquish it because it gives them an excuse for why they're not where they are. So there's a lot of complexity behind why some people won't let go of that, even when they've been shown that there's no truth behind it. There is nothing to fear, and you know, and that all people are pretty much the same. It's individuals, you know.
Well, but again, you know, it is an interesting thought as to the fact that, and that can be reversed, too. It can be reversed to the place where you have a minority. I don't care whether it's a just anybody from another land, another culture, who looks at me and says, you know, you've had everything handed to you. You grew up here and you did this, and you should be very successful. And why don't you have everything you want? You had every opportunity when I didn't, because I grew up in this other place. Is that a fair assessment? Of course not.
Of course not.
But you can understand, because if you're living in a third world country, you hear that the United States of America has sidewalks that are paved with gold. You hear that everybody has opportunities to be rich and famous. You hear that everybody is just so much better off. There's beautiful homes. There's beautiful schools. There's beautiful places of worship. And there is. The sidewalks aren't paved with gold. But the other stuff is true. However, it doesn't mean that it's just there for the taking. It doesn't mean that you just get handed all that stuff on a beautiful silver platter when you turn 18. Life is a struggle for all of us. I worked for one of the richest families in Florida. They had some of the same problems in their house that I have in mine. Well, one of them wasn't money, but was everything else you can think of. So some of these people hate us or hold us in bad light because they think that we're spoiled and they're not. And that's not a truism either.
Exactly.
You know, it's about all of us. It's about all of us, you know, learning to see that everything is gray. Nothing is black and white. And I always told my kids, by the time I'm in my 80s, everything will be a very strange shade of chartreuse. And we're getting close to that now. I was, and this is going to sound, a little bit rude, maybe. I hope not. I hope everybody takes it for what it's worth. But when I was a little girl, you didn't see a mixed family. You really didn't. And now it's commonplace, and it's beautiful. And it's what is my family. We look like a Benetton ad if I have everybody together. And some of us are tall, some of us are short, some of us are fat, some of us are skinny, some of us are beautiful like me, and others of us aren't so beautiful like my husband. So that's what it's supposed to be, right? And embracing all of that is what it's supposed to be about. We're almost out of time, but I want to let everybody know that we will not be on the air tomorrow morning. Our friendly witch doctors will be doing their show on Thursday. I go to take my test tomorrow, everybody, so everybody keep some good vibes out there for me because I'm not the sharpest pencil in the box. And I want to pass this test so that I can move on with another career at the age of 65. But I want everybody to go out there today and have a great day. It's beautiful and sunny here in South Florida. I hope there are other parts of the world where the snow has quit falling finally, these poor people. Every time I read something from a friend up north, oh, my God, it's been 80 degrees today, and tomorrow they say it's going to be down to 20. I can only think about how mean you all feel. I'm glad I don't wait on table for you anymore. So, everybody go out and have a great day. And I hope you will join us. God bless everybody. Bye-bye. Thanks, Shell. Talk to you later, honey.
Thanks, Reen. Good luck tomorrow. And from my estimation, you're one of the sharper pencils in the drawer. So take that to your test tomorrow.
All right, I will. Thanks, babe. See you
later. Bye, hon.